Welcome back to the third season finale of Flick 66, and we're listening to an updated version of the Route 66 theme song. By the way, the reason we call this show Flick 66 is Azusa Pacific University's main campus in beautiful Azusa, California, is right off historic Route 66. Good afternoon from the midst of the coronavirus stay-at-home situation. I'm Dr. Thomas Parham, Executive Director of Screenwriting at Azusa Pacific University. With me, as always, is...
Ryan Isay.
Who is adjunct professor... Oh, go ahead.
Yada, 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 yada.
He's adjunct professor of screen studies. I apologize for stepping on him. This whole having to do everything via Skype has been a very interesting challenge this semester, which I'm sure all of you identify with. And with us also is our student reviewer...
Aaron Linnemann.
Woo! Who's in the midst of final exam week.
Yep.
And then we have returning alumni critic, Ryan Clem Barnes.
Clem Barnes. But for the sake of clarity, I'm RCB and Ryan is Ryan.
Or Rize, take your pick. So there's no box office, so we won't talk about that. We're going to spend the first part of the show talking about how the industry is reacting. California's governor announced yesterday, Newsom, announced that theaters, churches, and gyms are still, quote, months, not weeks, end quote, away from reopening, which is kind of crazy. Now, theaters in other states that are starting to relax social distancing as of tomorrow, which is May 1st, it's going to be kind of interesting because the studios are not putting out new releases when only a handful of theaters are going to be opening nationwide. In fact, I sent the gang an interesting article, which is an interview between Variety and the head of the National Association of Theater Owners, aka NATO, the other NATO. But he basically said, yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of repertory screenings initially, which means, oh, cool, nothing like paying money to get out of the house to see something that I can watch at home. Although I think in this case, it might be the point to get out of the house. Be that as it may. Honestly, oh, what was that?
A bad movie to get out of the house and sit in a theater.
Say what?
I would watch a movie I don't like to get out of the house and sit in a theater to watch a movie.
Mm.
That's how much I like sitting in a theater watching movies.
I just hope that the opening of movie theaters in our country goes a little better than it did in China.
Yes.
They tried to reopen their theaters and a couple hours later closed them again.
Is that because the infection rate went up or infections?
Well, it was going down. They had no new cases, which is why they decided to reopen it. I have no idea why after a couple of hours they went back on that decision. Something must have happened. I'm not sure what it was. Maybe there was some exaggeration on how well things were going in order to reopen the theaters. And who knows? I just know it didn't last more than a few hours.
Yeah, that's what's really kind of interesting is that the theaters that do start to reopen, the capacity is going to be reduced greatly. I've heard between 25% full capacity to maybe 33% of full capacity. But that's going to put a serious... Well, obviously, to make 25% of what you would have made normally is better than making nothing, which is what they've been making for the past month and change. But we're in such uncharted territory right now. One thing they do look forward to is concessions, because no matter, even if you're seeing the cinematic equivalent of a rerun, the overinflated prices for popcorn and sodas traditionally is what really saves a lot of movie theater chains butts, because, you know, paying, you know, $6 for something that's probably costing them pennies for the syrup and the soda and the sparkling water. I mean, that's how they get out of the hole. I mean, that's why concession prices are so outrageously expensive. Plus, theater employees, they'll step up their cleaning efforts, thankfully, And also the people will be, I think they'll be mandating audiences to wear masks. Oh, another thing, they're going to be staggering showtimes. So instead of everybody converging on the theater at the same time, they'll stagger them, which I've always thought would be a good idea because, you know, that's why the concession lines get ridiculously long. One of the other things that's revealing about the interview with the NATO chief is that he's been in touch with all the big theater chains and none of them had plans to open yet. Because I think they want to get their ducks in a row, especially, the liability factor is big. I don't want to get into too much politics, but that's one of the things that is going to be negotiated the next stimulus / relief bill, is to try to indemnify business owners from lawsuits in case they reopen and people get sick, which... boy, I don't want to touch that right now, but, you know, to quote the 60s version of Lost in Space, danger, Will Robinson, danger.
Wait, is that a different quote than the new one?
Well, the new one, it's like, danger, Will Robinson. You know, they've got
it was impression more than just a quote. It was the, got it.
Got it. Okay, one more connected discussion before we get onto the big ticket item. Ampus announced yesterday they've tweaked the Oscar eligibility rules for films without theatrical releases, which is fascinating because that was, you know. Say what?
Netflix is probably so happy.
Oh, I'm sure Netflix and maybe even a little Hulu and Amazon. But what's interesting is that's always been the bellwether. Because you have to, you know, in normal circumstances, to be Oscar eligible, a film has to have a theatrical release in New York for at least a week, as well as Los Angeles for at least a week. And so Netflix and Amazon, especially, I could say Hulu, but let's get real. It's really Netflix. Netflix and Amazon are the heavy hitters with original content online for streaming. But interesting because, and I presume that, well, I wonder, is that going to be temporary or might that be permanent? Thoughts?
I hope it's temporary. I hope it's temporary. So, I don't care. I don't need a lot of people to have it be available, but I think that there should be at least the opportunity for people to see movies like Roma and The Irishman in theaters. I think those are theatrical films, and if you want to have them streaming to widen the scope of your audience, because, I mean, just look what happened with Parasite releasing on Hulu. Even though it's nearly the most profitable foreign language film to ever be released in the United States, when it released in on Hulu, it like got more views than like anything they put out. So the ability to watch something for parents that have kids and can't go out, or for people that are already paying for a streaming subscription and don't want to go out and spend the $20 to go see a movie in theaters, I like the opportunity, the option, but that for me doesn't take away the experience. Like Aaron said, good film, bad film, there are those of us that love the film going experience, and that's not going to go away ever.
Yep. Go ahead.
I'm with Rise A here, and I hope that it's not a permanent thing. I do know that also sound got put into one category now.
Yep.
So it's no longer sound mixing and sound design.
Sound mixing and was it mixing and editing?
Mixing and editing. Yeah. It's now just best sound.
Yeah, there were a lot of people upset about that. Although often, not always, but often if a film wins one, they usually have a high probability of winning the other historically. But I'm sorry, Ampus, you need to do a best stunt coordination, because seriously, yeah. I mean, I have several friends who are stuntmen and stuntwomen, and they literally put their lives on the line, and yet we give Oscars for hair and makeup? Come on, let's be fair.
What's crazy is that they have, I mean, it's considered like a separate job in a lot of other countries too. Well, especially if you have like action films, there are action choreographers that are like the action directors. They'll direct entire sequences of the film, and yet we don't give them any credit for that. It's strange. It really is.
Yeah.
And I did a little digging on that, how long the window's going to be for not needing a theatrical release to qualify.
Uh-huh.
They were saying once theaters start opening back up, they're going to go back to the 7-day requirement, but they're not going to limit it to Los Angeles and New York. They're going to expand it to San Francisco and Chicago and Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
So they have a couple of more places where if you're playing in this area, you still can qualify, just because we don't know which places are going to be opening up at which times.
Okay, and this leads us to the next topic, which is a bit of a hot button. Shots fired yesterday. AMC Theaters, which is on the verge of bankruptcy, refuses to play Universal films because of Trolls World Tour going straight to video on demand. I personally...
I understood it to be a little bit more complicated than that. I mean, not that I'm disagreeing with you. That was like the initial thing, but didn't Universal put out a statement saying that they plan on continuing even past coronavirus following this procedure? Now AMC's in the future that this is going to happen. It's going to become common policy rather than just an exception for these times. That was my understanding.
I hadn't seen that. I did read Universal's response, where they basically said, "We're not sorry we did it. We gave you know, millions of families with kids, at, you know, an hour and a half of entertainment during Easter weekend," and you know, they haven't released any numbers about how much. I mean, they couldn't have made as much money as they would have had it been a traditional theatrical release. But I know I rented it that first weekend. I have several friends who work at DreamWorks Animation. And give a shout out to Christina Lee Storm, whose title, she's Vice President of Technology, and her full title is longer than mine is. She and my friend Laura Samara Sams and then Hope Marie Scanlon worked on the film. And I read an interview with the director asking if he was disappointed that the film went straight to video on demand. And he said no, because people get to see it. Because here's the thing that's really weird, and this is related, that as theaters start to open, they're going to be playing repertory films, i.e. classics. By the way, I've heard that Marvel Studios plans to bring back some of the MCU films in re-release. Disney just needs to line its pockets because the parks are closed for a while. But the first two big releases are expected to be in July, and that's Tenet from Christopher Nolan. And Ryan Barnes, help me out with this. What's the other big one?
Mulan.
Thank you. Disney's Mulan, which was originally supposed to open in late March. So those are the two biggies opening. But here's the hitch. Scoob is going direct to video in May, which personally, after seeing the trailer, I'm surprised it wasn't direct to video in the first place. Meow. Yeah, I said it. Because, you know, after all these years, what we were really looking for was a CGI origin tale of the Scooby Gang. Not... But are AMC and now Regal's parent announced that they also plan to not play Universal films because of Trolls World Tour? Are they going to tell that to Warner Brothers too, which means that they don't get Tenet? I don't think so. That would be foolish. So I don't know. This is considering, I mean, this is, we're almost in early May. And so theaters that do open in the next 2 months are literally going to be playing repertory films for till mid-July. To say that we're not going to play any Universal films or possibly any Warner Brothers films, that just seems foolish.
I know, because AMC's next big video on demand release is the new Judd Apatow film. So they just announced that yesterday too.
Who's
Yeah, that's supposed to be great. The King of Staten Island.
Judd Apatow.
What studio is that for?
That's Universal.
That's Universal. Yeah, just and they're gonna take that straight to video on demand?
Yep.
I'll be really interested. What's fascinating is the corporate parents seem to have differing philosophies. Universal made Emma, The Invisible Man, which had been out for a little bit. For a while. Didn't that come out in January, Ryan? Rize?
I don't know if it was January, but it had been around for weeks. But Bloodshot, the film that had just come out, and The Hunt, the film that had just come out, like 2 weeks after they came out, they were, or 3 weeks after they were available on VOD. So they definitely were leading the charge in terms of releasing things for coronavirus. And in terms of that, I think that's great. I think in terms of this situation, I think it's fantastic that Universal did it. My understanding, and maybe I'm incorrect, but my understanding is that having seen some success with that, Universal was planning in the future to maybe, with at least some titles, release it either at the same time theatrically or very shortly after theatrical releases. And as much as I dislike AMC's recent business model, I do agree with their frustration as well as Regal's, because they make their profit off of people having no other option but going to the theater or illegally downloading. So they're hoping to get people that really need to go see that movie within the first couple of weeks to go out and spend the ticket money. If Universal is truly doing that, it's going to be the same thing that the faith-based films tried to do with the movie Left Behind in like 2000, 2001, when they were like, oh, let's simultaneously release it on DVD for the churches to watch together and theatrically. Well, we all know what happens there. People go pick up the DVD and rent it and show it to a room full of 30 people rather than 30 people as a group going to the movie theaters, as they did with a movie like Passion of the Christ, which granted had other reasons and controversy getting people to go to the theater. But the point's still there. When you give people options and one of them's cheaper, they're most often, or even just gives them the opportunity of not leaving their house, which 6 months from now, you know, when it's no longer, oh, I get to leave my house, some people may decide, save me money, save me going out, I'm just going to watch this from home. And if you're AMC or Regal and you're counting on those profits or people coming in to see it to sell your concession, that could be frustrating. So I see both sides of the argument, and I think it's going to depend on how we move forward after this pandemic.
Ryan, I did find the article that you referenced, and thank you, Google. Universal dropped a bomb yesterday, courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. No matter when or how theaters reopen, premium VOD is going to be part of its new normal. So they do plan to do, as soon as theaters reopen, we expect to release movies on both formats. Okay, so that's why AMC and Regal have bees in their bonnet. That's right. Fair. That's fair, and I don't think Warner's would be.
I think that's gonna suffer the most with kids' movies.
Well,
I think people are not gonna want to pay the ticket to bring their kids to the theater. I think that's where they're gonna make their most money for video on demand.
Yeah, and here they're
gonna be pissed, because that's also where theaters make the most money. Because when you go and your kids are like, "I want popcorn, I want candy, I want all this," that's huge.
It's huge and a lot of bucks. What's fascinating is that if you look at the different strategies, the Universal releases and Emma, The Invisible Man, The Hunt, and Trolls World Tour, all of those were premium video on demand, $20 to rent for a 2 day period? I think a 2 day period. Whereas Disney released Onward for purchase. A couple of weeks, like three, was it 3 weeks? Onward opened at the, it was the first Friday of March, and then coronavirus hit. So they made it available on video on demand, like, was it 2 or 3 weeks later? And then it went on Disney Plus the first Friday in April, which was crazy. I watched it again, of course, because I like the movie. Similarly, we'll talk about this franchise a little bit more, but on May the 4th, Disney Plus is going to start streaming Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker, earlier than expected. So each studio has a slightly different strategy of how they're doing it. Sony put Bloodshot available. They skipped the VOD thing and went straight to you can buy this for $20 or rent it for cheaper because it bombed at the theaters. Everybody's like, yeah, it's Vin Diesel flexing and running around.
He's trying so desperately to have something other than Fast and Furious.
Absolutely. But can we all take a moment to celebrate the fact that we've just discussed Disney and it's not the most greedy corporation around?
Yes.
Yeah, the first time it's happened in a while.
What's interesting, though, is remember Universal's corporate parent is now Comcast, and Warner Media's parent corporation is AT&T. By the way, I don't know if any of you watched last week with John Oliver, but one of his last new episodes, he ripped AT&T, which he affectionately nicknamed Business Daddy, for their terrible service. Which it's like, dude, okay. Warner Media is now, or sorry, AT&T is probably the largest media company in the world. Can you make it so your calls don't drop when I'm near a cell tower? I mean, could I have a conversation from my condo in Glendale to my office in Azusa without dropping calls at least once? Shameful. Let's move on. Really interesting thing, Mickey Rourke's... Good old Mickey Rourke. His indie film War Hunt, wrapped in Latvia and shot during the COVID-19 crisis. And I was talking with Ricky Staub, a previous guest this semester on our podcast, but he said, yeah, well, they're not dealing with unions. or they evidently, according to the Variety article about War Hunt, they did take temperatures of actors and crew routinely several times a day on set. They also maintain social distancing, but still, that seems like such a monumentally bad idea.
It's kind of crazy too, because the film was in pre-production when coronavirus started, and he got stranded in that country because of the coronavirus.
Oh yeah.
Restrictions. So it's like you figure at that point when you're planning to start, when this is already beginning, you'd be like, hey, let's postpone the production. The fact that it wasn't already underway and they said, yeah, let's just go ahead and start it, that's baffling to me.
I think it's a matter of, hey, nobody else is shooting. We're going to have something new. It's like, yeah, but it's got Mickey. I shouldn't be hard on Mickey Rourke. He's actually made some decent films in the past few years and hasn't been the hot – and his personal life hasn't been the hot mess it used to be back in the day. But yeah, that's just, it's very interesting. Boy, for those of you who are select Comcast customers, Peacock launched 2 weeks ago, and other eligible subscribers should start receiving Peacock by tomorrow, and the rest of us peasants can subscribe to it in mid-July. The free option will be lots of commercials, I'm sure. And then the premium option with few or no commercials will cost you some coin. I'm sorry, Peacock. I bought the Office box set for $30 on iTunes earlier this year, as well as Parks and Rec box set on iTunes.
Is airing a new episode in tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. They're going to have a new coronavirus episode-inspired episode to raise... as a fundraiser. I love Parks and Rec, and I already set the DVR. HBO Max will launch on May 27th. If you're an HBO subscriber through satellite or cable, you will get HBO Max for free. If you have HBO Now, which is their standalone service, that will transition to HBO Max. And HBO Go, which people who are already subscribing to HBO, that will be transitioning out completely.
What's the difference between Now and Go?
HBO Go is for people like me who have a subscription through a DirecTV or a cable company. HBO Now is standalone. And okay. In both cases, I don't know if this would change with Max, but in both cases, you generally had to wait 24 hours. You had to wait till the next day to be able to stream something.
Okay.
So if Westworld airs a new episode on Sunday, you had to wait till Monday to watch that on Go or Now. I'm not sure if Max... Go ahead.
I just find it annoying that now that if you have a TV subscription that you're not able to watch stream it the way that... Like, I think I find it the phasing out of HBO Go to be obnoxious. Because then isn't that just going to encourage people to no longer have the service and just... Well, it's encouraging everyone to get 15 subscriptions. I got my Netflix subscription. I got my Disney subscription. I got my... Like, I don't want to do that. What about people that just have TV and then be able to watch things on the apps in their own time? That's...
Well, I mean, it's really not different from what it is now.
Because... Well, no, but if you have TV, then you can no longer watch things on the app because you're going to have to pay for the HBO Now, aren't you?
No. If you're an HBO subscriber, you get Max for free.
Well, then why? What's the difference? Then again, I'm asking the same question. What's the difference between HBO Go and HBO Now? Because HBO Go would be you don't have to like you if you have it on your TV subscription or whatever, you can just watch it on HBO Go on your phone or on you know when it's not actually airing if you don't record or anything. So. Why? I guess I'm not understanding you HBO Max or HBO Now if you didn't have the standard subscription. But if you have a subscription, are you going to be able to log into free to use HBO Max? Because now you can't use HBO Now unless you pay for it.
Yeah, Now has always been a standalone service without – you don't have to have a cable or satellite subscription. It's basically – it's all about branding and marketing because – AT&T, the mothership or business daddy of the business daddy of Warner Media, everything's under one umbrella. So basically, if you subscribe to HBO on cable or satellite, you get Max for free. If you don't, you can subscribe to Max as a standalone, just like you can for HBO Now. It's really kind of a branding thing, with the exception that they're adding all this new content that wasn't available before.
So it's not like they're getting rid of HBO Go. It's more like they're merging HBO Go and HBO Now and now calling it HBO Max.
That's correct. Except for Now has always been standalone and Go has always been a freebie with a paid subscription.
Right, which is why I'm saying that it's almost like they're merged. So if you have a subscription, you could use it, but you could also, without a subscription, just pay for the service.
That's correct. And the big difference is HBO Max is going to have all this original programming.
You'll be able to stream, like, let's say a new season of Barry comes out and I want to watch the new episode of it, then I can watch it on HBO Max.
Yeah, you'll be able to watch it the day after on HBO Max. I love Barry because of where they left season two, sidebar, because of where they left season two, I don't really think it can go beyond three seasons. And if you're caught up, you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
And plus Bill Hader's starting to really blow up as a writer, director, actor. So what's interesting is that there's so many projects now that J.J. Abrams signed his $500 million deal with Warner Media, he announced a slew of projects. Well, three projects to begin with, and one of them is Justice League Dark. Another is a Shining related series called The Overlook, and the third one's original. And I don't have the information in front of me, but that's just the first of many things to come for him because they're not just giving him that $500 million because they like him. And we're also going to get the second season of Doom Patrol. I really don't think DC Universe is in it for the long haul. I'm pretty sure it's going to be folded into HBO Max. And of course, the big crown jewel is the 10 seasons of Friends, which Netflix paid a queen's ransom to extend their licensing arrangement with Warner Brothers Studio. But that's going exclusive to HBO Max. And as soon as as soon as Stay at Home has ended, we'll get that long-awaited Friends reunion special. Not scripted. It's just going to be the six of them sitting around talking about how much money they made. I'd like to be in the audience and say, why did the boys make really bad films and the women make better films?
I wouldn't give Jennifer Aniston too much credit, but yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Did anybody see the movie she did with Adam Sandler for Netflix?
Yeah. Which one? Because she did a couple The murder mystery.
She did with Adam Sandler. The NPR critics were hysterical. They were like, you know, it's kind of a routine Adam Sandler movie. It's likable enough. But Jennifer Aniston's really good. And she gives a real performance. And I'm like, girl, why did you bother? So I wish she would say no a little bit more often. But she tends to be pretty good in what she does do. As does... Courtney Cox and also Lisa Kudrow. By the way, Lisa Kudrow is going to play Steve Carell's wife in the forthcoming Space Force comedy for HBO Max. Well, I think it's for HBO.
In space.
So it's not going to be on Netflix anymore?
What? Friends?
The Space Force.
Oh, is that for Netflix?
I think it's for Netflix.
Oh yeah, it's probably for Netflix. There's so many streaming services. When I taught TV history last fall, as I was prepping my first lecture on the state of the television industry, I had to keep redoing it because I kept leaving out streaming services. But I don't think all of them will make it. Apple TV Plus, I'm talking about you.
Yeah, Netflix.
Say what?
It's Netflix.
Okay. But speaking of Netflix, they gained 15.7 million subscribers in quarter one of this year. Because, hey, can't leave the house? Ooh, I guess I'll get a Netflix account. So that's interesting.
The best streaming service in terms of new content on a regular basis, on a daily, not even weekly basis, because I go through all of them and be like, what's new? What's new on Amazon? What's new on Hulu? What's new on Tubi? What's new on, you know, HBO? And most of them, you're lucky if you get a handful of titles a week. But Netflix, it's not even possible to keep up with all of what they put on there.
It's crazy. And some of the what's fascinating is in the old days, everybody knew about, ooh, have you seen House of Cards? Ooh, have you seen Orange is the New Black? Now it's like something will be out for a couple of weeks and you'll find out from a friend, dude, you got to watch hashtag Black AF, which I don't know if y'all have seen it, but woo, I would compare it. It's Kenya Barris' first show for Netflix after he ankled ABC following the Blackish debacle. But
Curb Your Blackish.
Say what?
Curb Your Blackish.
Seriously, have you seen it? Have you seen it?
Yes, and the episode that I loved, I wasn't crazy about every episode. Some of them I thought were not as great as they could have been.
Let me guess, the number five? Love
was the one where they talk about Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
He is clearly talking about Jordan Peele's Us.
Yep.
That was the movie he's talking about, and I love it. Because if you go back and look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores, and even in an interview talks about, he doesn't specifically say that film he's talking about.
Oh, no.
He specifically said, I love Jordan Peele, but people were talking about Us like he was the new Hitchcock, and I took huge issue with that.
That episode is amazing. It's double length, but, you know, it's not, it's funny. People have been complaining that, oh, he's not much of an actor. It's like, dude, have you seen Larry David? He's not much of an actor either, but I would call it Curb Your Blackish. And Rashida Jones is hilarious. Since we're talking about television, one last thing before we get to our feature stories. With television production shut down, we're going to run out of new TV. I mean, it's going to be Bachelor, after they had to cancel the Bachelorette thing that they were planning. Bachelor is going to run a summer event series, basically a best of Bachelor. It's like, Wow. Okay.
The most stuff we're getting right now is like animated shows.
Which the cool thing about animated shows is you don't have to have your writers in a room. You don't have to have your animators in a room. So it'd be interesting if this spawns a new animation boom. What's kind of cool. Oh, go ahead.
I was just say One Day at a Time is filming, or not filming, but they're going to release an animated episode because that way they can record the voices and just continue production.
Cool. A plug for my good friend and also friend of APU Cinema, Cheryl J. Anderson's Netflix series Sweet Magnolias will be released on May 19th. It's based on a popular series of novels by Cheryl Woods, and I'm looking forward to that. She's got a great cast, and she's a solid writer. She's a great storyteller and just, you know, a wonderful woman. And also really interesting, another friend of APU Cinema, my friend Heather Jing Blatt is going to be working on, I think it's called Social Distance, but it's a new series for, I think, Netflix from some of the producers of Orange is the New Black. And I think it's kind of cool that some of the writers are using this opportunity. It's kind of like a challenge. Oh, so we can't shoot our actors in one location and the writing staff can't be in one location. Challenge accepted. So, and there've been a lot of film festivals that have challenged people to write and produce short films while they're socially distanced. So I think that's kind of cool that we're, you know, that necessity is the mother of invention, as the old aphorism goes, but people are finding a way to lean into our current predicament and make great art. It's called Social Distance. It was announced in Deadline, I guess yesterday, and Netflix preps quarantine anthology series from Jinji Cohen. And Jinji Cohen is the executive producer behind Orange is the New Black as well as Glow. So,
Weeds.
Say what?
The show Weeds.
Oh, yeah, and Weeds before that on Showtime. So I think it's going to be cool to see what they cook up. And boy, who knows when things will go back to it. Well, I don't think things are going to return to quote-unquote normal at all. I think we're gonna have a modified version of the new normal until there's either a vaccine or enough herd immunity, and either of those could possibly take a year to a year and a half. So forget the Waffle House. I don't know if any of you have heard this thing that some people, there's a Waffle House index that people say that how bad, you know, a natural disaster is based on if a Waffle House has to close. And I was reading an article saying, forget Waffle House, use the Disney parks. If Disneyland and Walt Disney World Resort are closed, you know it's serious, because the Walt Disney Company is not going to take chances on people getting sick like that measles outbreak a couple years ago in Anaheim at the Disney park. So I read an article last week saying that there's a possibility of the Disney parks not reopening till 2021, which is unfortunate for the people who work there and rely on that for their livelihoods. But man, when you those parks would be a breeding ground for a disease like this, because, you know, having to keep people 6 feet apart from you, wow. Oy.
Well, hopefully construction gets done on that Marvel area if it's still closed and they can't have crowds yet, but maybe loosen up the construction restrictions. I'm excited to see that.
I have no idea if construction companies are considered quote unquote essential or not. Let's talk about, we have two feature stories and some some summer binge recommendations. Fate of Tentpole Franchises, and I'm going to tag in Aaron and RCB to kind of lead us through. And the four big franchises, although one of them's not as big as the others, but Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Wars, DC Films, and Fast and Furious franchise. So Ryan Barnes and Aaron, take it away.
Well, if you want to take Marvel, I'll do Star Wars.
Ryan Barnes, sure, why don't you do Marvel?
All right, I'll break down Marvel. So pretty much everything shifted one space. So we're not getting a new Marvel movie until Black Widow this November, assuming we get back to a level of normalcy by that point. And then this was actually the source of one of the only times two studios had to negotiate together, because with the initial move, they had moved Doctor Strange 2 to November of next year, but they've now moved it again to March of 2022 to accommodate the third Tom Holland Spider-Man moving to November, because Tom Holland has to shoot the Uncharted film before he films his third Spider-Man film. So I think Marvel is really going to be one of the ones where they need to be really smart about how they reintegrate, because some people are saying that it's a huge benefit to them to get delayed, because you have a ton of people in the greater movie-going experience that are like, you know, I made it to Endgame. That was a big thing. I don't know that I want to keep going, keep having to be invested in this franchise going forward. And I think more and more you're going to see people maybe not sticking around for the long haul. They're like picking characters or franchises within Marvel that they like and sticking with those. But I don't think this is the last we've seen of the Marvel shifting their schedule around, because as it stands right now, between February of 2022 and July 2022, we're supposed to get Thor 4, Doctor Strange 2, Black Panther 2, and Captain Marvel 2. And there's still an unlisted October 2022 film. I don't see how you keep all of those in one year without overloading everyone on too many Marvel films.
Plus, you're competing with yourself then, too. If it's still in the theaters, you don't want another film from that franchise to be taken away from the box office. And in 4 months or whatever, those films don't usually leave theaters that quickly.
Exactly. And as of right now, there's a 5-week window between Thor 4 opening and Doctor Strange 2 opening.
Ooh, that seems kind of close.
I don't see how they don't change it again. And even me, I'm finding myself like, what am I actually invested in this franchise? Because I'm here for the Falcon and Winter Soldier series. Inevitably, they will make Ant-Man 3, and I will be there before anybody else. And I will go see anything Taika Waititi does. But I don't know that I'm rushing out there to see another Brie Larson film or another of these newer things that I'm intrigued to see what they're like. But there's so much going on. So I think they got to be careful about pacing themselves.
Now, will the shuffling of MCU films affect the TV series?
Yeah. What happens with right now is the sad thing is for the Falcon and Winter Soldier fans, they were 3 weeks away from finishing production. They were really close. So some people are saying, like, well, why don't they just do like a part one and part two, kind of like what Netflix does with seasons, and like release the final stuff at a different time, which I'm not against. Like, I know that besides Mandalorian season two, which is going to come out, I think, on time because they finished shooting.
Oh, yeah.
Falcon and Winter Soldier is my the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Well,
a lot of that is just wrapped up in how detailed the non-disclosure agreements are, because yes, people can work remotely, but if they have to work from home and their home isn't secure, or there's a risk that they could leak stuff about the show, that's what they have to kind of get around to make sure that they can actually finish all the footage that they've got so far for these series.
That's true.
That's
pretty ridiculous and hilarious that like we're treating security as if it's like national security. it's a comic book franchise.
One of the things that's kind of interesting is that Disney Plus has already greenlit Mandalorian season 3 before season 2 drops, and they've hired Leslie I'm stepping on Aaron's news, but Aaron's got a lot of news. So they've hired Leslie Headland, who is one of the co-creators of Russian Doll, along with Amy Poehler and Natasha Lyonne. But Leslie Headland is going to create and executive produce a female-centric Star Wars series for Disney Plus. I personally am hoping against hope that that might be an Ahsoka Tano. Ahsoka Tano? Did I say that right, Aaron?
Yeah.
Series Ahsoka. with Rosario Dawson, but who knows? That's just a rumor. I'm going to tag in Aaron now to update us on Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars.
Well, it's definitely an exciting week for Star Wars, especially if you're a fan of the Clone Wars. It's wrapping up in its final week. We got the penultimate episode on Friday, and then the finale on Monday, May the 4th, which will coincide with all the Skywalker saga, like we mentioned before, being dropped, and the quote unquote Mandalorian show, which is more just behind the scenes.
Oh, they've got like they've got a fancy name for it. It's like Disney, not Disney
Gallery.
Disney Gallery : The Mandalorian.
Yeah, and just a little bit about the Clone Wars is that it's the final arc. You can tell they put everything into this. Just like everybody's praising Dave Filoni. It's the fourth highest rated episode of all time on IMDb right now with a 9.9.
That's the next to the last episode, which just dropped last week, and it's titled appropriately The Phantom Apprentice.
Yes, and it is honestly some of the best Star Wars, this final arc, that I have probably ever seen outside of like the original trilogy. It's just masterful storytelling and how it corresponds with Revenge of the Sith, I think. I think the show, especially in its fifth season, makes awesome storytelling decisions. If you're remotely a Star Wars fan, I recommend, I recommend checking it out. I recommend looking on forums to see which are the good arcs and the good episodes to watch, because, you know, Clone Wars doesn't really seem like it's Disney trying to use nostalgia to create, revenue. Like, you can tell the people here at Lucasfilm on the show are really passionate about Star Wars, especially the prequels. It's just what they do with these final episodes. They're using original John Williams score. You have the original, like, opening track now. If you watch the show, it's different. It's a more third-party type soundtrack. But they use the original LucasArt logo. It's just they put everything into these final episodes. And what I was saying is one of the actors, the main actors who plays Darth Maul, if you haven't seen Solo and you don't know Darth Maul is back, it's been a couple of years. But the actor who voices Darth Maul...
Sam Witwer.
He's calling it a film on Twitter. So people are skeptical, thinking that they might release it as a movie on like Disney Plus once all the episodes are released, because the way the first and the second episode have worked is that right where the first episode ends, the second episode picks up and it flows like a movie. It's just Star Wars, awesomeness. And I feel like people who grew up reading the expanded universe, well, now that it's that, would really like this show. And especially my thing is, don't start with these final episodes. There's essential episodes you need to watch beforehand. But I think it's a really special time for Star Wars. And then I just wanted to give one more quick shout out, even though it's not exactly the movie realm of Star Wars. Star Wars Battlefront 2 released its last update today, and the developers were really involved with the community. So I want to give a shout out to them, because the game was trashed critically when it first came out, but the developers worked hard the last 2 years and to make it what it is now. And everybody pretty much in the community loves the game now. So just want to thank them for their 2 years of work.
And I can post on our, a quick mini binge of Clone Wars for those key episodes you need to see for the final arc to have resonance. Aaron was kind enough to provide that to me, so that's what I did yesterday in between grading papers. Also noteworthy is in the next to last episode of the series, they actually hired Ray Park, who played Darth Maul in episode 1, to do the mocap for Darth Maul. And there is a killer lightsaber battle, very reminiscent of Twilight of the Fates.
So. I know, and honestly, like, this is some of the best, like, corresponding pieces to a film that I've seen in a while.
Well, the thing that I like about what the episodes that Aaron's recommended to me is that I am not a prequel trilogy fan, and without violating anything in those films, Dave Filoni and his collaborators have made you appreciate, but by showing a different perspective of the same events, they're giving it the emotional resonance that those live action films lacked. And I'll stop. Mm-hmm. I'll stop there. Any other Star Wars news besides that?
I'd be willing to bet that they are going to cut this last arc into a film, but I don't think they're going to put it on Disney Plus. I think with everything going on, they're going to do like a Fathom events of
cutting them
all together.
I wouldn't even do the Fathom event. Just edit them all together and then do a limited, you know, like a 2-week widescreen release, because this is perfect. If you're going to do, you know, library films before new stuff opens in July, why not take a lavishly produced animated series and, you know, a beloved animated series? Because if you remember back to the beginning of Clone Wars, before it aired on Cartoon Network, Warners did release, quote unquote, the pilot episodes, which introduced Ahsoka as a theatrical release. So why not do that, you know, perfect bookends, except for now it's all Disney's.
And one quick thing for those listening, thinking about if they want to watch the show all the way through, the show is not shown in chronological order. So StarWars.com does put the order in which to chronologically watch it because of development and seasons and stuff. So just look up Clone Wars order if you're interested in watching the series. If you're that type of person, I do promise you that even with the bad episodes, it is all worth it in the end. Like, it just, you can tell season 1 is complete dud, but past that, you can tell that they just get better and better. And the way it just works with the Star Wars world, like, I just appreciate so much now. It really does improve the prequels, like Parham was saying.
The, either one of you want to provide an update on the DC films?
I can.
Go for it, RCB.
DC is pretty, it's pretty much like affected the same way a lot of Hollywood is, but not a lot of it is immediately showing, because the only immediate thing that's being presented was Wonder Woman got delayed from its original release and production is suspended on the Batman, Matt Reeves' new take on Batman, which I'm excited because they've talked about potentially having Robert Pattinson doing voiceover like a traditional noir. And I just really am interested in them doubling down on the noir genre for Batman. But that's pretty much on hold until things clear up and has been pushed to its October release date of October 1st.
That's October 1st, 21, right?
21. And it is the first Batman ever to be released in October, which I think is kind of funny because Batman always seems to suit Halloween to me. But I get that summer is a big time and you want the big money, and Batman does well in the summer.
Well, the rumor that's been floating around is that Matt Reeves is drawing his inspiration from the maxi series Batman the Long Halloween. So,
which would go in perfectly with this.
So things that make you go,
James Gunn's The Suicide Squad wrapped production before everything shut down, so they're working on everything in post. Still set to come out August 6th of 2021. So if things don't move, it'll be a year between Wonder Woman 84 and The Suicide Squad. So that's a year between DC releases.
Hmm. And there are rumors floating around that they're going to, that Warner's is developing a sequel to Joker.
Yes. Yes. That is kind of unfortunate.
I got a random DC question.
Yes.
Are they recasting The Flash after that incident?
There's been speculation, but nothing. I mean, The Flash has a release date again, but I don't think that there's all kinds of interesting rumors and speculation, but there's nothing firmed up. I think that because when that incident happened, and I don't want to talk about it now, just go online and look it up, Ezra Miller incident, you'll find it. But because he was in the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover with the TV, with the CW TV series, that seems to be a sign that they will not recast the role.
Yeah.
And Fast and Furious, they had to shuffle things around. They were originally going to, do another spinoff, and then the 10th film. I can't keep track of them all because they keep getting. Was it nine that's been delayed, and the 10th is supposed to be the finale, and because of things getting pushed, it's crazy. But
The ninth one is the one that was just supposed to come out like this summer. They had planned after Paul Walker's demise to take the series to 10 and then end. But we'll see what they do with spinoffs, since Hobbs and Shaw wasn't originally in that plan. So
Hobbs and Shaw?
That wasn't originally in the plan. That actually got in the way of 9 coming out sooner, and there was some infighting in the cast over that because some of the key players were not in the spinoff one,
right,
and they had to wait to continue the franchise for that film to be made.
I wonder if they're going to bring back, it's no surprise now, but Kevin Hart and Ryan Reynolds had uncredited cameos in Hobbs and Shaw, but I wonder if they're going to bring them in for either a sequel or another sidequel. I mean, Universal likes money, let's face it. And considering that the first movie was an unabashed Point Break ripoff, and 10 movies later, or how many ever, because the ninth movie was finished and Hobbs and Shaw is the spinoff, so that's a 10th movie. It's crazy. But yeah, people like money, people like IPs. Okay, and we've already talked about this quite a bit, but boy, it will, I guess so much depends on what Mother Nature and, you know, the different state governments have in mind for, you know, public health requirements, because no industry is going to reopen completely until it is safe to do so. And the thing is, there are so many people out of work. It's just crazy. And when people are out of work, they don't buy stuff. When they don't buy stuff, they don't pay taxes. And then the state's economies are hit. This is not the subject of our podcast, but higher education institutions are taking a huge hit because, again, if people aren't buying stuff, state-funded schools don't have tax revenue that they get funded by. So a lot of states have already told public universities, we are cutting your budgets. And, you know, private schools like APU are still affected as well. But, I don't know. I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen. It's just... Like somebody brought, there was an interesting meme that somebody posted, in complete misquote, but there's a scene in Avengers Endgame where Steve and Natasha are talking. It's Natasha, right?
Yeah.
Steve and Natasha are talking, and he's talking about how he saw a pod of whales on the way in, and you know how the water's cleaner and everything's. It's like, you know, it's not all bad. And Natasha just basically tells him to stop being such a cockeyed optimist. I'm paraphrasing greatly. Anybody have any thoughts about where we are and where we might be going?
I just had one quick thought. Going back on the Universal thing, is how are creators and filmmakers going to respond to their films just being put on video on demand? Is that going to affect like contracts with them? It's just something to consider too. That was my quick thought.
I mean, where it could be interesting is if members of the creative team have gross points, which means whatever the movie grosses, they get a percentage of that, versus net points. And Hollywood studios are notorious for finding ways to, oh, we didn't make any money off that. It's like, yeah, that was the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Don't lie. That's why, you know, Christopher Tolkien and Peter Jackson both sued New Line / Warners. And those lawsuits had to be settled before the Hobbit trilogy could proceed. But so there might be some interesting pushback from creatives if they get gross points. Directors or actors are more likely to have gross points than writers, although there are a handful of superstar writers who do have gross points. But I have not seen any hard figures about how much money Trolls World Tour made on VOD. I did read in an article that they made $100 million in profit on the movie, which is more than the first movie made. But
that's because they also video on demand, you make a lot more, the studios make a lot more back than
writers. Right. Because
well, there's also what I was reading. One element that they're not considering is that they're seeing this as a model for the future. Like, look how much money that we made. Well, the obvious factor is that in the future, if we don't have a pandemic, that number is going to decrease.
Bingo.
The other thing that people aren't considering right now is that they already marketed this film with a budget that they would usually allot to a theatrical release. And,
yep.
And in future for VOD releases, they're not going to spend that same amount of money on marketing. So that's going to affect the decrease in numbers going forward as well.
I will shed a tear the day that I see a trailer in the theater and it says coming to video on demand.
Oh, I don't
think seen that. The Discovery, that Netflix movie with Jason Segel, when I went to a Lemley theater, they played a trailer for that. And I'm like, I'm watching a trailer for a Netflix film in the theater, which is crazy. But at least, you know, you're at an art house theater, and that's the type of art house theater that would be playing Roma and Irishman. So that kind of symbiotic relationship,
yeah,
is nice.
To quote Shakespeare's The Tempest, "Oh, brave new world with such things in it." Okay, we're just about out of time. Real quickly, before we sign off for the summer, everybody, give me your top three binge favorites. Ryan Barnes, you go first.
Oh, so many choices. Right now on Netflix, I'm going back and forth between my two guilty pleasure shows, which are The West Wing and Community. Because Community just got on there, and Community is just it just gets crazier and crazier, but I love it. It's where the Russo brothers started before they went in to do Marvel, and they did other things before that, but I knew them first from Community. And The West Wing is just sad how much it's become science fiction, because the idea of people in government trying to just do stuff to help people seems so far gone. But it's nice to think of a somewhat simpler time. And my last recommendation would be, for those of you who don't know, there is an animated series on Disney Plus called Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes. It's only two seasons, and I love it because it draws inspiration directly from comic book arcs.
Yep.
And you get to be introduced to a lot of things. This was how I was introduced to Black Panther and Captain Marvel and the Guardians of the Galaxy. And they canceled it after two seasons because that's when Disney was really starting to take over Marvel, and they wanted to do a new series that looked more like the movies. It was never as good, in my opinion. But if you want something that's just very instructive about the world of Marvel and a fun time, I would go with Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Good choices. How about you, Aaron?
So I have to agree with is it RCB?
Yeah.
Community is just such a great time binging. And then, as I said earlier, if you are a Star Wars fan, give Clone Wars a chance. Make sure to watch it in chronological order. And if you want just the essentials, I'll talk to Doctor Dr. P a little more, on maybe a couple more episodes that are essential, and we'll list them out. And then for a third choice, I've been, you know, watching Curb. I love Curb.
Did you watch this season?
I have not yet.
The Spite Store.
Still have to catch up.
The Spite Store. That's like the big...
He's probably still in the earlier seasons.
Oh, you're not even... Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, the thing about Curb, you don't have to... There's only a few mega plot points that affect the series.
Yeah, his marital status definitely changes, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Anything else, Aaron?
No, those were my three. And just please, for a service for yourself, don't try to watch the last Clone Wars episodes over the hype. It won't do you any service if you start with those episodes.
Okay. Rize.
I don't know about me, but we talked a lot about binge watching over the last couple of podcasts, but I do have new ones that I've watched that I didn't mention last time. I did a 3-month-long trial of Showtime, so I caught up on Ray Donovan. I watched from season 2 to season 7, so I had actually already seen season 2, but I forgot, and so I got like 3 or 4 episodes in, and I'm like, you know, I don't remember enough about this, so I'll rewatch it. And then I watched all of the remaining seasons that I hadn't seen. And with Homeland finishing, I watched from season 4 to the end. I watched the second season. I've been watching a lot of TV, guys. No movies. And then I watched the second season of Kidding, which may or may not get a third season. We're still waiting to see. But it's definitely, I think, one of the best things both Jim Carrey and Michelle Gondry from The Science of Sleep and Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind have done in quite some time. And it has that kind of comedy but very melancholy sort of vibe to it that you would get from like Eternal Sunshine. Definitely a different narrative than that. But yeah, those have been the things I've been binge watching on a weekly basis, because there are still new things being released on TV. For instance, they brought back, they canceled the production of the next season of The Amazing Race. I know, me and my reality TV. But the season that is upcoming was actually filmed like 6 months, a year ago. So we're going to have that coming on once Survivor's over. But I've actually been hooked on, addicted to MTV's The Challenge, if anyone's watched that. It's kind of like Survivor meets Big Brother meets The Amazing Race, and they bring back the same contestants, adding new ones like rookies each year. But they're dubbing this the most dangerous season ever, which is amusing. Someone in this previous episode almost got hypothermia in one of the challenges. I know I'm selling it so much, but it's just the drama. I get sucked in, especially when alone in my apartment for so many hours. Watching people fight on TV, it's like I have family in the room with me or something. I don't know.
That's awesome.
Cool. And since we've already been talking about Clone Wars final season, and I did a mini binge thanks to Aaron's recommendation, so I won't talk that up anymore. But I will talk about things that I have been binging. In no particular order, Killing Eve, which started on BBC America and is now on AMC for its third season. It's crazy. It's really based on a series of novels, basically about a female hit woman, or that's redundant, a hit woman, but she's kind of cray cray. And the government agent who's played by, oh, why am I blanking on her name? I can picture her.
Sandra.
Say what? Sandra Oh. Sandra Oh. Thank you. Sandra Oh. Plays Eve, who's an American intelligence officer working with MI6 in London. And it's crazy because Eve, Villanelle, becomes fascinated / obsessed with Eve. So they have this really strange symbiotic relationship, and it's just very great acting, developed by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who was showrunner first season. And now they're going into third season. It's taken some interesting twists and turns, and I won't spoil it because you should get caught up. Something else that I recently finished binge, it was a limited series on FX on Hulu called Devs by Alex Garland, who's most famous for Ex Machina and Annihilation. But it's crazy good, a little slow. I personally think it would have been a tighter six-episode miniseries instead of eight. But it gets all into philosophy and religion and predestination and determinism / free will. Any of you guys watched it?
I have not.
Ryan,
I was holding out because I wanted to wait for it to finish. But I'm definitely planning on making that.
You need to finish it so we can talk about it, because it's when I got to the ending, I'm like, I mean, the last three episodes especially. You know, the first episodes are set up, but the last three episodes, they just have. You know, in episode six, we actually find out definitively. We suspect what Devs is, but we find out definitively. And the next two episodes deal with the ramifications of that. And it's like, wow. But yeah, I highly recommend this. And then I think I might have already talked this up on the podcast, but it just, I love this show so much. And I was late to the party. But it's called Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist on NBC. You can stream it for free on NBC.com with commercials. But it's just, have any of you guys seen it?
I've not.
I'm a bit of...
It because I was going to stay away just because of one line that they play in the commercial that I've watched over and over. The commercial gets played all the time when I watch Hulu, and they have that one line where she says, "You had sex last night, didn't you?" And it's just such a strange question to casually ask someone.
Well, it's
kind of turned me away from wanting to watch the show, but your praise of it has made me more interested in it.
To be fair, it's Zoe. Zoe's in a bit of a romantic triangle as this. At the beginning of the series, as well as throughout all of season one, but it's to her best friend who is not so secretly in love with her because she can hear his thoughts in the form of song. But the thing that just made me so happy the show is expertly cast, but Mary Steenburgen and Peter Gallagher and Jane Levy plays Zoe, and Skylar Astin from the Pitch Perfect movies is her bestie / unrequited. Well, he's in love with her, but she likes him a lot. And I think all of us have been there. But Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls plays Zoe's boss and gets to sing, and she's quite good. But the thing that really made me so happy in the in episode 11, which just aired, the season finale is coming up on Sunday, is that Mary Steenburgen, a great Oscar-winning actor whom I adore, and Bernadette Peters, great Tony-winning actor whom I also adore, they have a scene together, and it's just amazing because you have two mature actors who dared to let themselves age in a well-written scene talking about things of substance. And I'm just like, I love both of these women. I followed their careers for decades, and to see them doing their thing, you know, being able to play mature women, having a mature conversation about mature topics in our youth obsessed culture. I'm like, okay, somebody at NBC deserves a raise, because yes, you have all these young people who headlined the show, but the fact that they wrote meaty, substantial parts for these veteran award-winning women just made me so happy. Okay.
That makes me want to see it even more, and I was already, once you told me Skylar Astin, or is that right? Astin, am I saying it right?
Yeah, Skylar Astin. Yeah, so when it's you just...
I was even more interested. Well, I thought he was good in Pitch Perfect, but I saw him do a performance from the Spring Awakening, the Broadway show, on one of the late nights, and he's got some spectacular range.
Dude, he gets to show it off in the show too. They're really good about sharing. What's funny is Jane did not start getting her own musical numbers till like well into the second half of the season, which is interesting. But no, the cast is great, and everybody, you know, everybody might not be the most polished singer, but they brought in Oh, she played the female lead in Altered Carbon. Why am I blanking on her name? African American Tony winner.
Renee Elise Goldsberry.
Thank you. Thank you. They brought her in as Lauren Graham's rival. And so they get to throw down musically a couple of times in episodes. So it's just a joy to watch and well written. And it would work. Even if they weren't singing, it would work. But it works beautifully. Okay. Thanks for joining us for this season on Flix 66. Everybody stay safe and healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.